Join us for the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society's annual conference. It's happening October 24th through the 26th in New York City. This year's theme, Rethinking Paradigms, Innovative Approaches for Optimal Wellness. And it's not just for healthcare professionals. Teachers, parents, and curious minds are invited too. We've got a phenomenal lineup of keynote speakers. Dr. Thomas Campbell, physician and co-author of The China Study, bringing insights on nutrition and lifestyle medicine. And Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, trauma expert and author of The Body Keeps the Score, who practically rewrote how we think about trauma. I'll be chatting with some of this year's speakers in upcoming episodes of Healthy Brain, Happy Body, so stay tuned to get a sneak peek and maybe even a little inspired. Find the registration link in the show notes. It's 3 days of inspiration, insight, and community you won't want to miss. Tom Fink, treasurer of NRDS, has this to say about the conference.
It's a broad-based, multimodal approach to health and education, and really pulls a lot of things together, not just individual interventions such as neurofeedback, but these health-related interventions, diet, exercise, etc. So I think it really is a pretty dynamic group of presenters that are going to be able to speak to adults and children with difficulties in our complex society.
So join us in New York City, October 24th through the 26th. Find the registration link in the show notes or at nrbs.org. We'll see you there. Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Our guide today is Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, one of the most influential voices in mental health, especially trauma and recovery. He has spent his career studying the effects of trauma on children and adults, as well as developing and studying cutting-edge interventions. Dr. van der Kolk has started up nationwide programs focused on studying and treating childhood trauma, and as you probably know, is the author of the best-selling book, The Body Keeps the Score. We discussed his history as a leading figure in understanding the physiologic effects of trauma and where he sees the field going. Listeners, today we're talking with Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, who has had a massive impact on how we think about and intervene with trauma. Dr. van der Kolk is keynoting the NRBS conference in October, and we are fortunate to have him join us. Dr. van der Kolk, welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
Good afternoon.
Now, obviously, your book, The Body Keeps the Score, has had a massive impact, and it's reached clinicians and parents, patients, the general public, educators. It was published in 2014, but is still one of the most popular books on trauma. In fact, a lot of the patients that I see have found me because they have read your book.
Good.
So what do you think explains its continued resonance?
I really don't quite know. It's actually the number one nonfiction bestseller in the New York Times today. I don't quite get it. It must resonate with something in that I think psychiatry has sort of medicalized human suffering, and I think people really sort of resonate with not being seen as having a disease, but more being seen as people who have coped with particular situations in their lives that have been affected by.
So your book doesn't medicalize; it really humanizes the experience.
Well, I wouldn't quite put it that way. I just in the book I write about what I have learned over the years.
Well, and a lot has happened since the book was published, a lot in the area, in the fields of trauma and trauma recovery. If you were writing the book today, what new perspectives might you include?
Well, we are actually finishing a book this weekend.
Great.
A workbook. And then we're starting another book called Come to Your Senses, which is really, we've learned a lot about psychedelics in the past. About pain, I think that's a big thing. And we're much more aware of the life of the body and the life of sensations and how people make meaning out of things and how there's continuing physiological disturbances that drive people's behavior. So we have moved a little bit since that time, but not very much.
Well, what do you think we miss as clinicians? What are we overlooking when we work with trauma survivors?
Well, I think, psychotherapy is about talking and understanding. But there's a real question whether just talking and understanding helps people to completely recover. I think people need to have visceral experiences of feeling alive, feeling engaged, and being connected with people. And so the whole notion that, like for one thing, we have a crazy diagnostic system called the DSM, which just has no scientific validity whatsoever. And clinicians have a very, they face it, talking and having a warm relationship with somebody will fix or will rectify what's gone wrong. And that's not entirely true. I noticed really trauma is not about events that happen so much. Trauma is about how you become a different person because of those events and how those experiences shape your brains, shape how you perceive the world. And to really recover may take much more engagement on the part of the people who want to get better.
So engaging beyond, obviously beyond medications, but also obviously beyond talk therapy.
Even beyond, I think it's very good for people to understand what's going on with them and to make meaning out of what goes on with them and feeling cared for and not judged and understood. But you also need to do something to sort of locate your body and your sensations in the present. How to be truly alive right now. And that's, of course, where neurofeedback comes in. Also, in that, trauma changes the way you perceive the world. It changes the way that your brain engages with reality. And sometimes it becomes very hard to get out of this stuck, basically being stuck or being unable to focus and concentrate and pay attention. And so often that people need to have other things having to do very much with moving and attention and focusing that might help them get better.
Well, for those of us who are trained in talk therapy primarily, what's a good entry point? Where do we start going beyond that?
Well, you start with, how are you? Now you start with just helping people to heal their experiences and to articulate what goes on. I think psychotherapy is very good for allowing people to feel what they feel and know what they know. And that's a big job. I think these days, I'm sort of an old guy and left behind in some ways. These days, therapists hope to manage people. And I find it always very bizarre. We can barely manage ourselves. How can we manage another person? And so I think it's a little odd. But helping people to manage themselves and to feel what they feel and become aware what their internal options are is a very good thing to do.
Well, I think the word manage reflects our healthcare system as much as anything else.
Yeah. Well, but that's the system we live in, and that's the system that most clinicians I know subject themselves to. And the medical model is, you're screwed up and I'm not. And if you go through therapy, at the end, you'll end up just as normal as I am. And that, I think, not such a great paradigm.
Well, in the conference in October, you're going to be talking about the impact that trauma has on the developing mind, the developing brain. And obviously, it's an incredibly complex topic. Is there any overarching theme, any general effect of developmental trauma?
Well, if you have developmental trauma, your core orientation is, I'm a damaged person, and there's probably a reason why I'm damaged, because I must be a bad person, I'm not right. So the development of the trauma has a lot to do with feelings of inadequacy, feelings of having a hard time being here and joyfully engaging. And I see there's ways of helping people to engage more in life, doing yoga having an exercise practice, and really helping you allow yourself to feel what you feel on a very deep level and come to the realization on some way that what happened to you in the past is in fact over, and that you're in a new experience, to really open yourself up. You're feeling alive right now.
And these physical interventions, the yoga, body-based interventions, they help open up that idea of living in a new experience.
It opens up your relation to yourself. So that some really damages your relation to yourself. And you feel uptight, you feel panicky, you feel heartbroken, you feel your gut is edged. So there's some of these leads to an internal sense of deadness or anxiety. There's something wrong. And so the question is, how do we calm that system down? You can really feel yourself who you are. But I will talk quite a bit about neurofeedback, which sadly is not getting the traction that I wish it would. It's a very powerful system. For example, in the past 10 years, my research has been mainly on psychedelics, and I think psychedelics are a wonderful potential treatments. But I always start my lectures with talk first about neurofeedback, because there is something simpler than psychedelics that can help people to focus, to concentrate, and to find a sense of calm and engagement.
Of course, this is a bio and neurofeedback conference.
Yeah.
So that's the interest.
We're going to be talking about it.
Yeah. Of course, which will be great. And one of the things I was actually really wondering about as I was preparing for this, is how did you get interested in neurofeedback? What's your history in that intervention?
Like getting into neurofeedback is very much a function of getting to know Zebrafish. But and Zebra really was very inspirational to me about it. Here is something that's really different than anything else. And so I spent the last 50 years always looking for what else can we do? What else might work? I did the first research on EMDR, more or less. I did the first research on yoga. And then I met Sebrin, and I really saw from the patients she introduced me to and from the work she introduced me to, that this is something that really can make a substantial difference, that you cannot talk yourself into it. I've always been focused on neuroscience, and we see all the abnormalities that occur as a result of trauma. And neurofeedback really opened up the possibility that we can actually see some of the brain circuitry that really doesn't go, that goes away with trauma. And not only do we see the damaged neural circuitry, but it revealed the possibility that we might be able to repair some of those pathways. And so I think neurofeedback for me was a very profound experience that we can actually go right into the central nervous system and tweak it in a way that you can be get more focused, more calm, and more oriented. And Devin helps with the therapy also.
You've been talking also about newer or more recent developments in interventions like psychedelics.
Yeah.
How do you see neurofeedback complementing or interfacing with some of these newer interventions, such as psychedelics?
Well, you know, they are different. You know, psychedelics in some way are really quite crude in that you take a substance and it changes the way you perceive the world. And during that experience, you can actually reorganize some of your basic orientation. But that's rather haphazard. You know, you take a drug and you never know what will get manifested in psychedelics. It's very interesting what could come up, and it can be extremely helpful, as our research shows. But what neurofeedback can do is that you habitually have a hard time engaging. You have habitually a way of feeling energy and out of control. And neurofeedback can really help people to become quieter, more focused, more goal-oriented, and to really not get hijacked by other things that belong to them.
And I can imagine that the psychedelics, as they get as we develop them, will get a little less haphazard. And
oh no, psychedelics are by nature haphazard. If you take LSD or even peyote, you don't know what's going to happen. Yep. And it's very different from neurofeedback, because the neurofeedback, you from moment to moment can track with people how you're doing, you feel calmer, you feel safer, more oriented. So neurofeedback is a much more manageable experience. It's more predictable. You can actually find out what it is that can help this person to get focused. In psychedelics, you don't know what's going to happen.
And with these developing interventions, on the other side of that is we live in a world that many might argue is increasing trauma. So all the digital stress, screen time, living virtually and remotely. How do you see those as shaping the way we think about trauma?
Well, you know, this is a hard time to talk about, you see, because our civilization is getting dismantled. And everything that I and everybody else I know, what we stand for, science, social justice, opportunity, universal medical care, opportunities, is in our society getting dismantled. So we are dealing with some gigantic issues out there that, as a therapist, are largely out of your control. And we all, we therapists tend to be grandiose, and we think that we can actually make a difference. But what's happening in our society is extremely worrisome.
I think most people would agree with you, regardless of where they sit sort of socially or socio-politically. And given that, you've been in the field a long time and have seen these societal changes as well as changes within the field. So what keeps you inspired? Why do you keep doing this work, given that civilization is getting dismantled?
Well, because what's happening out there is not the same as happening inside of you. So you can still focus on your relationships and your work and helping people while all this stuff is happening about you. But of course, what's happening about us is very terrifying.
If you could leave today's clinicians with one message about working with trauma, what would that be?
Most of all, do your own work. Use yourself as a laboratory. And that's, again, different from the medical model. In reality, all of our lives are difficult. All of us have issues in our relationships. All of us have issues with parents and children and friends and organizations we work for. So life is tough. And so the best laboratory you have is you. And see what helps you to calm yourself. So what helps you to feel compassionate. What helps you to have hope for the next day. And so it's really the way of civilization also has changed. When I was growing up, it was totally expected that you would get the same treatments yourself as you would inflict on the people you work with. And the sense that you're crazy and I'm not, it wasn't all that true. And also, a lot of people were pretty crazy who were my teachers and my students. But we are a crazy species. We are not a rational group of people. It's always a miracle when something works out okay. It's great we have a conference and everybody shows up and the bills get paid and people go home and these are always amazing things, because chaos is always just around the corner.
So we should not forget that we, like our clients, are human and have all of the craziness and chaos that they maybe in different specifics, but we shouldn't forget that we are the same species.
Yep.
And what might you say to parents or educators as they're grappling not just with their kids, but also with the changes and the struggles in society today?
I would be very modest in what I would tell people to do. You know, it's interesting when you look at child rearing manuals over the years, and they're usually written by guys whose wives are taking care of the babies, and they give advice to people how to raise your kids. And when you look at the old child rearing manual, you basically always shake your head and go like, what a crazy idea those people have. And that's true for us also. So giving advice to people how to do is pretty weird, actually. But the core issue is that people need to be seen, people need to know, people need to be responded to, people need to be enforced, people need to be validated. And so there's a lot of forces like screens that really get in the way of being a vital member of your society. And that's really what being human is to be a vital member of a community where you play your role play.
Well, Dr. Vanderkolk, thank you so much for joining us here on Healthy Brain, Happy Body, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you in October in New York City.
Great. See you then.
You are listening to Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, a leading clinician, researcher, and policy advocate for understanding and treating trauma. His book, The Body Keeps the Score, remains a bestseller over a decade after its publication. Join us in New York City for his keynote address to our annual conference. Follow the link in the show notes for registration. You can also subscribe to this podcast by clicking the Subscribe Here link in the show notes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Reviews help us to get more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and of course, our yearly conference. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. This podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.